Welcome to Quest for Gold, episode 26. We are exactly 6 months from the Summer Games in Japan. But before we get to the summer sports, let's talk some winter sports. Ski jumping in the Midwest. This weekend marks Norgi Ski Club's annual International Winter Tournament. Saturday features the Junior Competition and K70 Competition. Sunday, the K70 U.S. Cup Five Hills Tournament and Longstanding Competition. It's a lot of fun to witness, and Fox River Grove's Norgi Ski Club is the home to three ski jump Olympians in 2018. I had a chance to play around there a couple years ago. We've got the video attached below. Brittany Tennell is competing in the U.S. Figure Skating Championships in Greensboro. She led the way after the short program. We talked to Brittany in episode 13 of Quest for Gold. In U.S. gymnastics news, more fallout this week in the Dr. Larry Nassar scandal. Search warrants were issued at the home and gym of Coach John Gettert. Gettert was one of two head coaches of the 2012 U.S. Women's Olympic Gymnastics team. He worked closely with Dr. Larry Nassar. Authorities are reportedly looking at financial records and documents related to Gettert's Twist Stars USA Gymnastics Club just outside of Lansing, Michigan. Coronavirus has been in the news. It's been widespread in Wuhan, China, so much so they've actually closed some movement in parts of the city. Japan is one of the countries that does have a confirmed case of the coronavirus, as has the U.S. Olympics officials say they're monitoring the situation. You may remember in 2016, some athletes shied away from competing in Rio over fears of the Zika virus. We'll talk more about that in an upcoming episode. Chicago Red Stars Julie Ertz and Allison Nayer have been named to the U.S. Olympic qualifying roster for the U.S. women's national team. They haven't qualified yet. Other familiar faces like Megan Rapinoe and Carly Lloyd are also on that roster. And a cool experience for the U.S. women's softball team. They rang the bell on the New York Stock Exchange Friday. Front and center pitcher Monica Abbott, who we interviewed in episode 22. On this week's Athlete Spotlight, we talked to a guy I've been anxious to talk to since we launched Quest for Gold, Robbie Hummel. Well-known Purdue basketball standout, turned to the NBA where he played for a couple seasons and eventually found himself playing internationally. But he fell out of love with the sport. That is, until a new opportunity came along, 3-on-3 Olympic basketball, which is set to debut this summer in Japan. First of all, this is really cool because 3-on-3 basketball has never been done in the Olympics before. First of all, why don't you explain what it is? I mean, I think it's pretty obvious, but for people who maybe aren't familiar with it, people who you've maybe had to explain it to, how would you explain it?
Yeah, it's a different game than 5-on-5, and it can be a little, I think, confusing at first to play. Just from there's certain strategies and certain philosophies that you have almost burned into your mind from 5-on-5 that you just can't do in 3-on-3. But it's a half-court game. It's 10 minutes or first 21, whichever happens first. You play with ones and twos. There's no really checking it up unless there's a foul or out of bounds. It's one of those deals where if I'm guarding you and you score, our team would take it out of the net. We'd throw it to the three-point line to clear it, and then we would play. So you have three players on the floor. You have one sub. And it's funny because our team, we sub every dead ball. Because there's times where you go like six or seven possessions in a row of offense to defense and vice versa. And everybody's gassed. It's funny to see how, if you think about playing pickup, no one ever wants to sub out, right?
Sure.
But in this, you can see moments where all three guys in the court want to sub and you can only sub one guy out. So it's an interesting game. It's been really fun to kind of get to know the game and play it, and then also play at a high level.
You played that way, I'm sure, you know, on your driveway or with friends growing up, and then, you know, you went on to college and played at a very high level. But how did you get back into 3-on-3? Did someone introduce this to you? Did you just kind of stumble onto it?
Yeah, so I was playing in Russia, and I was in Moscow, and I legitimately hated every day. Like, I had enough. So I had a friend who, his name is Craig Moore. He played at Northwestern. We played against each other for 2 years when I was at Purdue. He was playing up in Evanston, and he was a guy that we became friends just through playing against each other. But then after our college careers, he would always check in, whether I was with the Timberwolves or in Spain, Italy, or my last year in Moscow. He's the guy who would check box scores. He works on Wall Street in New York. And he'd check box scores and just check in. You know, hey, I saw you didn't play a whole lot, or I saw you had a big game, good stuff, like whatever. And the summer after I was in Russia, he hit me up and he was like, you know, where are you signing this year? And I told him, I was like, I'm not. I have offers, but I'm done. I cannot go back overseas. If I'm not going to play in the NBA, I don't want to play anymore. And he was like, dude, don't do it. The 9-to-5 job is brutal. don't stop playing while you still can. And I was like, I've made up my mind. I've got some stuff lined up with TV, with Big Ten Network and ESPN, but I've had enough of doing this over here. And he understood, and he was like, well, you know, we played 3-on-3, and we're going to start playing on the World Tour this summer. Would you want to maybe be our sixth guy? You can have six guys in your roster. And I was certainly skeptical because it's like, you know, you start looking at the dynamics of playing, and most of these tournaments are in Asia or Europe. There's only a few in North America. So it's like, you're telling me that we're going to fly 13 hours to play a maximum of 5 10-minute games. So you're playing 50 minutes total if you win the whole thing. There's two pool play games. And if you're in your top two of your three-team pool, then you get to the quarterfinals, and it would be three games to win the whole thing. And you're going to tell me that our flights are covered, our hotels are covered, and they're going to pay for our food, too. That seems like a pretty big scam to me. So he convinced me to go on a trip to South Korea, and we flew to Seoul and played and ended up getting fourth. Our first time ever playing together, and the kind of the rest is history. And now, like last summer, our team played in, I believe it was 21 countries. So it was all summer, and it was full go, full on toward the Olympics. So
are these all ex-NBAers? I mean, who's making teams?
It's honestly, our team is made up of a good amount of Ivy guys. We have two guys from Princeton, Dan Mavrides and Kareem Maddox. I play at Purdue, so I'm not Ivy League. Craig's Northwestern, so he's also Big Ten. Damon Huffman played at Brown. And then Zaire Carrington's our other guy. He played at Lehigh, so it's not Ivy League either. But half our team is Ivy League based. And actually, a big reason we were able to even start on this whole World Tour circuit was because John Rogers, who's the CEO of Ariel Investments, was a Princeton grad, played with like Craig Robinson, back when Craig played at Princeton, and that's obviously Barack Obama's brother-in-law now. But he was very generous and helped us tremendously in that first year before USA Basketball and FIBA really got involved to help us and to cover the travel costs and whatnot. But, the other teams, you know, there's an American team from New York that is pretty good, and they have a couple D2 guys. Joey King, who actually is from Minneapolis, he joined their team this last summer. He played in Minnesota. But the European teams, there's a couple guys that you saw that used to play on their national teams and now have converted, but just guys that are from those countries and like to play.
Well, I saw you've had quite a bit of success. Were you 2019 USA Men's Basketball Player of the Year? Did I read that right?
Yeah, slow year for USA Basketball, clearly. The 5-on-5 World Cup team not doing well must have helped me out.
Well, still, though, I mean, that's a nice piece of hardware to have. I mean, where are you in this qualification process? I mean, does Team USA already have a qualifying bid? Have they not named the roster? Are you fighting for a roster spot? What is the process?
That's where it gets kind of confusing. So we won the World Championships, which was the first time the U.S. had ever won. It's been a sport that's been dominated by the Serbians. And you would think if you win the World Cup or the World Championships leading into the Olympic year that you would qualify for the Olympics, right?
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, that's not the way FIBA runs this. So the first three bids were given out to the top three federations in terms of points. And they determine your country's federation ranking by adding your top 100 players, top 9 events. So Serbia is the top country. They've got a bunch of good teams. They've got a bunch of people playing. They easily have 100 people with 9 events. So they've maxed their points out. Russia and China are second and third. However, with the Russians' Olympic ban, I think that's kind of an interesting subplot to this. But as of now, I think they're still in it. They were second and third federation points-wise. So there's now an Olympic qualifying tournament in India, March 19th to the 21st. And that will be a tourney where they give out three bids. So the top three teams, will get into the Olympics. Japan is the host country, has a bid. And then they have another tournament where it's countries that have not played 5-on-5 Olympic basketball in I don't know how long. And they get to fight it out for the last spot, which to me is a tragedy.
Sure.
That's like some Boys and Girls Club stuff right there where everybody gets an opportunity, not the Olympic Games, where you are trying to determine the best team in the world. But, you know, that's the way it goes. And we'll have a, I think we're having a mini camp here in Chicago to kind of pick the team and see who goes. But, you know, I feel good about my chances, and I feel like it's been a really cool experience. So
it seems
winning
like
the World Cup is certainly a nice boost.
It seems like it would be a tragedy if Team USA wasn't represented in some form. But the countries that you're rattling off right now are not countries that I think would pop up in a lot of people's minds. As far
yeah, I mean,
as
Serbia is a really great country for basketball. I get that 100%. They have earned their keep in 3-on-3, and they're good in 5-on-5, and the Chinese, I think they have, I don't know if they have one team in the top 30. And the Russians, they have like one team maybe in the top 30. But yeah, when you're talking about the best teams in 3-on-3 in the world, they don't reside from those two countries. So to me, it's too bad. It could be an awesome event, but we'll see. Some people have to get out of the way, if you know what I mean.
Sure. I mean, have you seen what the venue looks like in Japan at all?
I've heard good things, but I have not been over. We played in Tokyo. We were actually an hour and a half outside Tokyo, but that's where the last 3-on-3 event of the year was. They call it the World Tour Final. And Japan was awesome. Like, I can only imagine they will do a fantastic job hosting the Olympics.
And this will be outdoors?
Yes.
It's going to be very humid.
Yeah, no doubt. It'll be a little toasty, but that's okay. You get used to it from playing all summer. It's a sport that's been designed to play in the warmth.
So while all of this is going on, while you're in training, you know, while you're looking up at rankings and other teams, you're broadcasting. You're with ESPN. You're with Big Ten Network. Is it hard to juggle both? I mean, you got a lot of plates spinning in the air right now.
Yeah, it's been a challenge. You know, I love doing the games. I love covering college basketball, so I didn't want to just take the year off. I feel like I'm in a good place in my career in that regard, but it has been a lot. You know, tomorrow I'll wake up at 6:30. That alarm will go off. I'll get over to the place where I'll meet my trainer, who I worked out with when I was actually playing professionally. And we'll be on the court for anywhere from an hour to an hour 30. I'll try to get a lift in, and then I've got a flight to Lubbock, Texas. I'm through Dallas, actually, around 2 tomorrow afternoon. So that's kind of the typical day. I've changed my diet. I've given up pop. I've given up booze. I've really tried to do everything I can to be in the best shape possible. And it's honestly amazing to see how just in – really the month and a half or 2 months I've done that, how different my body looks. So it's been kind of a challenge, because especially when you're on the road, but you just find ways to try to eat as healthy as you can.
Have you morphed as a player from 5-on-5 to 3-on-3? I mean, are there different things that you're looking for, different reactions than maybe you had when you were playing 5-on-5?
I always felt like, maybe not so much in the NBA, because I was more of a stand in the corner and shoot threes when the ball comes to you type player. But like in college, I was always a guy that I could dribble pass and shoot, and I think that's really where the best players in 3-on-3, especially if you have size, come from. So I think that I play the way I always have. I try to make the right play. If I'm open, I shoot. If I'm guarded, I pass. I've really worked to try to become a better post player, because a lot of teams switch pick and roll, which makes sense because there are only three guys on the court, so it's hard to help. So they switch, and you have a lot of smaller guys guarding you. So I've tried to really be more effective posting up and finding easy baskets at the rim.
Is it hard for you to take this step by step? Does your brain wander to Japan and think, "Oh, I can't wait to be there. I can't wait to be at opening ceremonies," or you realize there are many steps ahead of you and you got to just take this day by day?
There's still a lot of steps. Obviously, that's the ultimate goal. I think when you look at kind of how surreal this whole situation is, like I was so done with playing. Like I was totally cool with just playing a couple of times a week in Chicago. There's a great pickup run that I play in really close to my house in Lincoln Park. And I was fine with just playing on Monday, Wednesday nights there and playing for fun and playing golf in the summers and just doing the broadcasting stuff. But this kind of popped up, and I think the World Cup was definitely an eye-opener to how close we can be to potentially winning a gold medal and playing in the Olympics. But with that being said, there's still a lot to go on before we get to that step.
Is there any way people can see more of this? I mean, do you guys, are your games or matches broadcast anywhere?
They're all on YouTube. So you can watch them on YouTube. They live stream them. Now, with some of the World Tour events, they've now gone to Flow Sports, which they get to pay for. But once the games are over, they archive them. So, like, you could look up the World Cup Championship game is on YouTube, and a couple of our games from Pool Player on YouTube, and they'll kind of like archive games on there, and you can watch. So it's pretty cool.
This sounds like it will be an awesome sport to watch in the Olympics. I mean, just visually, it sounds like it'll be fun, especially here in America, to watch, you know, things that we did growing up or things that we do now essentially become an Olympic sport.
Yeah, no, I think it's you have to look at like a beach volleyball and how much that has really gained traction and people enjoy watching that. And not that people don't like watching traditional volleyball either. It's a great sport. But I don't think that 3-on-3 is going to necessarily take the spot of 5-on-5, but it certainly adds value to the Olympics. And I think it does give some smaller countries a chance to compete. I don't necessarily like the way that they're having their own tournament for some of these countries, but I think that it's certainly much easier to put together a team of four guys than it is a team of 12 to compete with a country like the United States and basketball.
Do you feel that some of the responsibility of making this sport succeed falls on you and how the U.S. is able to compete in the Olympics? I mean, if you guys come home with a medal, you know, obviously that could really mean a boom for the sport.
Yeah, I mean, that certainly would be nice, but to me, I'm not concerned with that. You know, I don't feel any pressure from that. There's more pressure because I want to make the Olympics and I want our team to get to experience that. And I think it would be great for the United States to be in the inaugural games. But I don't feel any pressure in like letting the country down or anything like that. You know, it's, you just take it one day at a time and you work as hard as you can and hope for the best. But that's kind of how it's been since I was in high school. You know, you can't feel pressure to get a scholarship or to get drafted or to play at a high level. And you just get to go out there and do it. But I think if you add that extra pressure to yourself, you're only hurting yourself.
You watch the Olympics a lot as a kid or growing up or even as an adult?
Yeah, so my parents took my brother and I to the 96 games in Atlanta. So I've been to an Olympics as a kid growing up. My mom was super into gymnastics and figure skating in the summer and winter Olympics. So we'd always watch, you know, track and field was always really big to watch. Honestly, we watched all the sports. It was when the Olympics were on every night, that is what we did. It was just one of those things where I grew up in a big sports household. And I certainly thought that my USA basketball days were over after the World University Games. I played as a sophomore on our college kind of Olympic team, and I thought that was probably as far as I could go because the U.S. national team is filled with guys who are Hall of Famers. You know, it's not an easy team to make by any means, barring like a explosion of newfound talent and athleticism. It was probably not going to happen. So it's a pretty surreal kind of story, and you know, it's pretty cool, but the Olympics have certainly been a big part of my life since I was a kid.
Good stuff. Where can people find you if they want to follow you online?
I mean, on Twitter, just Robbie Hummel. Instagram, Robbie Hummel. Those would be the two spots. I'm decent about doing stuff on both. I'm not super active, but I'm trying to do better. So that'd be where to find me.
And, of course, we can find you on Big Ten Network and ESPN doing some games.
Yep, you can find me there as well.
I posted some videos of 3-on-3 basketball below so you can get a feel for what this sport is going to look like come July. Should be a lot of fun. Thanks for listening. I'm Brian Burr. We'll see you next week on the next episode of Quest for Gold.